everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have reached Wednesday. It's a pivotal point in the week. A lot of great things happen.
Absolutely.
NFL season's going to start next week. Lots to get to today. OBJ has some lofty goals. We finally heard from him. Jerry Jones will pay anything to win. And Eagles, 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 which is exactly where we start this morning. Unlike last season, where they were the chasers, this season they are the chasees. Defending the Super Bowl title they earned last season, the Eagles recently put up posters in their locker room commemorating their Super Bowl 52 win over the Patriots. When asked about said posters, Malcolm Jenkins says he hates it. He wants to move forward, not backward. Take a listen.
My focus is all on, you know, adding another eye to the end of that. And so it's great, you know, but that I'm well beyond celebrating last year's accomplishments, because they don't mean anything this year. They don't get us anything. I said it earlier this offseason, it's not boxing where we get to hold the belt and somebody has to come beat us and take it. We don't have anything. we're at the bottom just like everybody else.
They do get you one thing, CC. They get you a target on your back, which is what the Eagles have right now. How much harder is it going to be for this Philadelphia team now that they have that Super Bowl win behind them last season? They got to go out and defend it.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. If you look at where they were last year, they'd had zero experience. I mean, they were a franchise in transition. Is Carson Wentz, is he that guy? Was he worth that draft pick? Their personnel department was changing. Howie Roseman was starting to take back over the team. Who is Doug going to be as a coach? Like, we didn't know all these things. So for them to be able to repeat, I think it's just easier once you have some experience. And if you do that without your primetime quarterback, without your franchise quarterback going into his third year. So I think all those things, all the experiences that they went through, depending on each other, next guy up, that mentality, all those things work. The credibility that the coach has in the locker room to be able to speak to the guys. Yeah, I believe all those things, you can use them moving forward, but you don't get anything from a banner. I mean, you don't get anything inspiration from looking at something one day, because it was all those little decisions that they made that led to them getting the championship. So I understand what Malcolm is saying. But, man, in NFL, and that's the exciting thing about it, this is not the NBA. Golden State don't have a lead on everyone. Our regular season, it is going to mean something. Every year in our divisions, Nick, we talk about how many times a team comes from last in their division and they win that division. And that is the mentality and the parity within the league. And Malcolm is right. But I do believe that what they went through, that would be like, okay, whatever Tom Brady's went through, it doesn't affect them as they – that experience, I believe, will help them moving forward.
I think it's extraordinary commentary by one of the most thoughtful and one of the most intelligent players we have in the league in Malcolm Jenkins, and here's why. I think the experience absolutely can help them once they get towards the end of the season, if they're in a similar position, if they have a good record early, and okay, guys, we know how important these late games can be. Mm-hmm. If they're back in the playoffs, all right, nothing is a bigger game than what we've already played. But it absolutely, and we've seen it happen before, there's a reason there's such a thing as a Super Bowl hangover. Typically, it's for the losing team, but sometimes for the winning team, where it is hard to get jacked back up to where you need to be each and every Sunday. And one thing that you've made a big impression on me on is listening to what guys say and taking them seriously. The Eagles, to a man last year, were adamant that the underdog mentality was a huge part of their success.
Yes.
They wore the masks. They talked about it at the parade. They sold them for charity. Well, that is gone forever now. Like, you can, every team tries to do the nobody believes in us, we're underdogs. You can't do that when you're the defending champs, who are actually better equipped this year than last year. You didn't have John Elway retire. You actually got John Elway back from injury. Like,
right.
Your version of
yes,
it.
Yes, so, a young John
Elway. A young John. So for all these reasons, like, that part, I do think that is removed from them. Also, on a very just factual basis, you have a harder road after having won the Super Bowl than the year before, because you won your division. You are now playing outside of your set schedule, the Vikings and the Rams, as opposed to second or third or fourth place in those divisions. One of the reasons teams can go last to first is that year after you finish last, you get two games against two other teams that finished last. Schedule-wise also, NFC East, just unlucky draw this year.
Unlucky.
Draw the NFC South.
Yep.
They got three teams I think is good. In the AFC, who do you draw? The AFC South, one of the divisions that produced two playoff teams and has Luck and Watson coming back from injury. So for all those reasons, I do think it's a tougher road, but I think the experience, if they get through the early part of the season, the experience can pay dividends.
We'll break down what the team has and where they fit into their division in a second, but you talk about experience. What traps can having that experience? What can you fall into? Yeah, you have that experience, but also all of the teams have seen what you can do, what you're very good at. Is that part of sort of what hamstrings you a little bit?
Well, I think that listening to people, listening to the general public, you get more pats on the back. It's just a human condition. When you're out in public, people are going to say things to you. The availability for the Eagles to do public events, the amount of money that they have made. So you're hearing a lot of positive things in the community, but does that help you in trying to win this year's championship? No, because last year it wasn't that way. I wish if they can remember where they were when they left training camp, just a team trying to survive. Like, I mean, they stormed through the first 2 months of the season. They need to get themselves back in position that they were in last year, that at the end of the season, every game that they played, it really meant something.
So, okay, so now you have this Eagles team where you're not 100% certain if Carson Wentz is going to start. We found out that wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey may be missing 2 or 3 weeks. How much of a disadvantage does that put this Philadelphia Eagles team at the start of the season?
Well, the Jeffrey thing, I think, is significant. They lost Torrey Smith. Now, theoretically, they upgraded to Mike Wallace. But it also should be noted, I mean, Mike Wallace last year had 750 yards in Baltimore. He's also age 32 season, and going ninth year in the league. So how much of an upgrade will that effectively be? We also know that they lost their backup tight end. Now they drafted a tight end in the second round. But there are, as far as your ability to move the ball vertically, I think Alshon's their best option. I think he's better than Nelson Aguilar. I think you saw they gave him a long-term extension at the end of last season. To me, that could be a significant early season loss.
And Alshon Jeffries works better with a speed receiver. The speed receiver, Mike Wallace, works better with a good slot receiver, which they have in Nelson Aguilar, and a good tight end, which they have in Ertz. But also, his speed works better with a big physical possession receiver, who Alshon Jeffries is. So they are a team that, just like they finished last season, going forward, they won't have most of their frontline guys to start the season. Now, will the backup players step up the way Nick Foles did against the Vikings, NFC Championship, and in the Super Bowl? The way that we've seen the left tackle have to step up and to be able to play significant amounts of minutes. So will these players be able to do that? I think that they will be able to do that. But also, they got some players coming back. They got the middle linebacker, Jordan Hicks, coming back. People don't know his name, haven't spoken much about him. He is a very good football player. So the
Sproles will be back. He hasn't played in a preseason game yet, but Sproles is an interesting weapon.
500 career catches that they have a guy coming out of the backfield. So they are a talented, talented football team, Nick.
I just, one thing on Alshon Jeffrey. I do want to see what he looks like when he comes back. He had his surgery in late February and this long season with the Super Bowl, and I get that a guy who he injured himself last year's training camp. So he played all year with an injury. I understand why he wouldn't want to schedule a surgery for 2 days after the Super Bowl. Give yourself some time to relax and recuperate, especially after winning a championship. But this is a guy who was a star in this league in year two. He was the guy the Bears drafted him to be in year two and has never recaptured that. He showed enough of that last season that the Eagles showed faith in him and gave him that extension. He's now not going to be ready, it would appear, for week one. I'm interested to see the progression he makes, not only physically as far as health, but his ability to become his best self again, which we've only seen for fleeting moments in the league.
Well, the Eagles will have their work cut out for them. They take on the Falcons first up Thursday night football next week. All right, coming up, is everybody overreacting to the Patriots missing Julian Edelman? We hear from him next on First Things First.
Football is about to make its long-anticipated return to living rooms all across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So, if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. To celebrate week one, DraftKings is hosting a free team pick'em promo. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use code FIRST. All you have to do is pick at least half of the winning teams correctly and you'll win a share of $1 million. That's code FIRST, F-I-R-S-T, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/pick'em for details.
So it's been a while since we've started a season talking about what the Patriots don't have, but this year it's no secret they are light at wide receiver, mainly because Julian Edelman will miss the first four games for violating the league's performance-enhancing drug policy. Behind him, a very depleted group. Edelman was asked about his upcoming absence. Here's what he had to say.
Real football starts soon, so it's definitely been a reality check, but I'm not going to sit here and worry about things I can't control. Ultimately, you know, I put myself in this situation, so it's more of let's go and get myself ready for when I can play.
Yeah, I won't be there for the first four, so I don't want to go into those weeks saying I wish I would have done this or I wish I would have done that, get a couple here. Yeah, so it's been a hard week.
So, you see, we talk about Julian Edelman missing time as if he's going to miss a substantial amount of time. It's a month. It's a month into the season. You'd like to think the Patriots could sort of hold down the fort until he gets back. How important is Edelman to the Patriots' Super Bowl hopes?
Oh, he's important. He's an important cog to what they're doing. He's probably Tom's closest friend on and off the field. Tom feels very, very comfortable. If you listen to Tom, a few of the articles that he's talked about, the lack of chemistry with his wide receivers and that they still need a ways to go to be game ready. So I have concern about Edelman when he's not in there. It's not as if it's an injury where he's going to be out all year. He's only going to miss a quarter of the season.
And it's also not an injury to where even if we were like he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with an injury, but when he comes back, he's going to still be dealing with the effects of the injury. Like, he's going to come back as close to full strength as you can come back, having missed a month of football.
Right. Now, he is a pro, so he will come back in shape. But because of the PED suspension, he won't be at the facility. The street drug facilities, he's at the facilities, in the meetings every day. So there's a little more of a disconnect. Now, I know that he'll be looking to kind of really try to resurrect his name, because no one wants to get suspended for PEDs. No one, especially an undersized guy. People talk about he got short area quickness. He always talks about people don't give him credit for the type of football player he is. The reason why he's so significant is because we respect what he does for New England. New England's ability to play multiple formations with him, it makes their ability to be more complicated and confuse the defense. When you lose him, you lose the versatility. And guys start playing one or two spots compared to him playing four or five spots in the offense. So Josh McDaniel, he will have to be able to come up with a game plan, because they are going to miss his overall versatility.
So here's to your point, Jenna, when you teed up Chris, they will have him back not only by the playoffs, by Halloween. And we have seen the Patriots deal with a four-game suspension for Tom Brady and be 3-1. We also know that Once again, the Patriots have, going into the season, what is considered one of the four easiest schedules in the league. Now, that could change, but a lot of that's because it seems like, gosh, every year the Pats have an easy schedule. Well, it's because they don't have to play the Pats, and they get six games against their division. So, like, that's 40% of your schedule. It's like, why does every other team in the AFC East have a tough schedule? Because they have to play the Pats. The Patriots don't. So early for the season, what do they have? Houston, at Jacksonville, at Detroit, Miami. So Houston, they've played them early in the season each of the last few years. Houston has played them close last year, but lost. 2 years ago, they beat Houston without Tom Brady. And so Miami, we don't think is going to be good. Like, the Pats will be fine in that regard. As far as what Chris is saying about formation-wise once he gets back, that's what I think they're going to have to do when he's not there. When he's not there, what I think we're going to see is the Patriots gaining a lot of first downs before the ball is snapped. Like, okay, Brady's in the shotgun. Now he's under center. There's guys moving everywhere. The defense is confused. We know that early in season, we say it's like an extended preseason. That's not just for the offenses. That's for the defenses. The Patriots are going to be getting into alignments and formations to where it's an easy 7 yards for Tom Brady before the ball's even snapped, no matter who he's throwing
You're saying the Patriots are going to do that in an effort to sort of gain some advantage before Edelman gets
Correct.
Back? Or this is their game plan all along?
Well, I think both, but I think that they're going to particularly have to do it because of lack of talent before Edelman gets back.
How good is Julian Edelman? I mean, how good is he to this New England Patriots team? I mean, he's not a standout, absolutely incredible wide receiver, but for the Patriots, they need this guy.
He's one of the top five slot receivers that we have in pro football. And his relationship with Tom Brady, that makes him so, so effective. Also, you have to realize, when he's on the field, man, he gets a lot of one-on-one coverage because they got Gronk out there. Not only do they have Gronk out there, but they have the type of system that they can put a running back on a linebacker. So then you get worried about the running back. And their ability to go no huddle, which Nick mentioned, it gives them a huge advantage. Tom Brady's able to force pressure on the defense to make you play very simple coverages. Cover one, cover three, things he can identify. And when Tom can do that, it's a huge advantage for him. But him and Edelman have worked out in season, off season. They spend a lot of time together. And that part of the chemistry part, that part can't be replaced with another player. But I think he's underrated for what he does. People think anyone can be a slot receiver. No, because he's got the mental toughness. Watch how many big hits he takes during the game and during the season. He blocks. He's a smart football player. You know that because they give him the responsibility of going in motion and playing in different positions. So he is valuable.
In the last Super Bowl they won, he took a hit that I thought concussed him. He looked like he was woozy on the field. And then a quarter later made the play that saved the game, the double-tipped catch in double coverage against Atlanta. So, like, no, he's excellent for what they do. Now, when he does come back, it will matter not only the four games missed, but the season missed from last year. So it will be a long time without football for Julian Edelman. But I think that once the season starts, we are going to change what we're focusing on with New England. This offseason, we focused on the loss of Nate Solder. We have focused on the lack of wide receivers. Guess what? The Pats' offense will be fine. Last year, they were number one in points, number two in yards. Maybe that ticks down a bit. What I think we're going to start focusing on, if there's problems in New England, is the defense. I think the storyline for New England is not going to be, wow, with no Edelman, they can't move the football. It's going to be, can the defense get enough stops to allow this team to win games?
And one thing, Nick, you and I keep going back and forth on, watch the development of Cordarrelle Patterson, especially in the first four games. It gives Bill four games that he can develop this guy to figure out, okay, once I do get Edelman back. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw quick screens thrown to Cordarrelle. Also, watch him carrying the ball out of the backfield. The number one skill he has is running with the ball in open field. In Belichick, there's no one better at utilizing someone's talent and getting the best of that talent.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up on the other side, Odell Beckham Jr. has got some big expectations for himself. Hear it from him next. First and first. College football's back Saturday on Fox. Catch a full day's action as Lane Kiffin's Florida Atlantic faces the 7th-ranked Oklahoma Sooners. It all starts at 11:30 Eastern on Fox, or you could stream it on the Fox Sports app.
FAU's going to pull off the upset.
Watch the freshman quarterback at Nebraska, too. 8 o'clock. He's going
to
be nice.
By the way, I'm not – FAU's, I don't think, actually going to pull off the upset. I just like to get that out there.
Back here on First Things First, we're going viral. The Ohio
That's Chris's school.
The Ohio State Buckeyes. Did you get all of it? Mm-hmm. They've got 6 wide receivers drafted the last 3 seasons. Now they've got to commit who wants to follow those same footsteps. Take a listen.
Chris Carter. Joey Galloway. Santonio Holmes. Michael Thomas. Garrett Wilson. I'm trying to be the next iconic wideout at Ohio State. I want to put my name alongside the legend. And being one of the highest rated receivers ever to commit here, it's within my reach. Becoming a Buckeye is a lifelong dream come true. Columbus is home to me. It's where I was raised.
Do you remember this game with the Titans?
I can't wait to get back to where it all began. Now, where I've been growing my game in the last 5 years, that's another story.
Wow, I got excited for a second.
Impressive.
That's one of the coolest things about your story is before you got to Ohio State, not known for wide receivers.
Yes.
No, a great football program for the 70 years before you got there, or however many years, 80 years before you got there, but they had never had an All-American wide receiver, correct?
Yes.
And now they just listed 4, but there's Terry Glenn was an All-American wide receiver.
David Boston.
There have been a bunch since you. That's really cool. That kid's from Columbus?
Yes.
Is what he said? That's awesome. That's a really cool thing.
Besides putting on 50 pounds.
He's from Texas, going to Columbus.
Oh, okay.
Every once in a while, we go outside the state and steal
somebody
something.
Out. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they ain't producing no wide receivers at University of Texas. Come on down, son.
All right. Hey, time for some stories to start your morning.
Tom Herman's recruiting in the wrong places.
Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. And we are sticking with Ohio State. Sophomore Dwayne Haskins has been named the starting quarterback. The 5th-ranked Buckeyes open the season on Saturday against Oregon State. CeCe, how far can this team go with Haskins at QB?
They have the opportunity. When you talk about Alabama and what they have their quarterback battle and what they can do with Tua in there because he's an elite thrower. Dwayne Haskins is the best throwing quarterback I've seen in Ohio State since Art Schleister. Now, I've been watching Ohio State for a long time. We've had some great athletes. Cardale has a big arm, but this kid right here has the pack. He will be playing on Sundays. I don't know if he will win the Heisman Trophy, but he will be playing in the NFL when his career finishes at the Ohio State.
Real quick, any impact with no Urban Meyer for this game?
Of course there's impact. Urban's one of the great leaders and motivators that we have in sports, but they have a couple veteran wide receivers, Paris Campbell, Johnny Dixon, guys that have been there 4 and 5 years. They will be able to help ease the burden for the young quarterback. That quarterback will. You know why he went to Ohio State? He went there to play for Urban Meyer.
All right, moving on to the NFL now. Todd Bowles says he will talk to the Jets coaches on Thursday about their quarterback decision. They will either go with rookie quarterback Sam Darnold, veteran Teddy Bridgewater, or senior citizen Josh McCown. CeCe, who do you think will start for the Jets week 1?
I saw Josh McCown yesterday. Josh McCown looking good. He got that younger haircut. He's trying to go a little European soccer player. I think Sam Darnold, when they drafted him, talking to people in the Jets, what he's accomplished, not only in the preseason games, but what he's accomplished in the classroom, the challenges that they have presented to him from a defensive standpoint. Todd Bowles is a defensive coach, so he has put some challenges out there. He's passed with flying colors. They haven't announced it yet. Todd didn't tell me that yesterday in my conversation with him, but wink, wink. Sam Darnold will be out there.
And CeCe was at the Jets facility talking to the players yesterday. I was not, but I didn't have to be there to know Sam Darnold's going to start. Everything they've done since drafting him, even with him missing the beginning of training camp, you just look at the passes they're asking him to make in the preseason games. You can tell they are trying to make it so don't make any mistakes, don't have any awful games, don't make it so we can't start you week 1 because we want to start you week 1. I think Teddy'd be their best option for if they just wanted to win week 1, but they have bigger things at play trying to change the entire culture there.
All right, let's move on to Dez Bryant. 8 days away, still no team for Dez. Doesn't look like he'll be on a team for week one. He tweeted out that he might not play until later in the year. All right, CeCe, what does this all mean for Dez Bryant?
Every time I go on Twitter with Dez, I get more and more confused. Like, I don't know if he wants to play football, because all the good football players, they're playing football or trying to play football. So he's obviously turned down the opportunity to play with the Browns. To me, that is somewhat troubling, because right now, $4 million is like $10 million. And being on an NFL team, trying to resurrect your career, you can't do it at home.
And I don't understand the advice he's getting as far as someone needs to tell him, Dez, if you don't play this year, you might not play again.
It's on the board.
It's on the board. A player at his age who misses a full season, and if you're not on a week one roster and a team doesn't have that guaranteed salary committed to you, even if you do get picked up, if you suffer some type of injury that could just knock you out 4 weeks, they could cut you and move on.
Nick, you're my numbers guy. How many bad seasons in a row has Dez had?
Three.
What, three bad ones?
Three bad ones in a row, and he might miss one.
Okay, now.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do that. Like, turning down the Ravens
offer was
the first
mistake. I'm going to send him over to Skip. He's going to be your FS1. We'll sign him.
You're going to be our contributor.
You talking about taking a pay cut.
Well, he turned down $21 million, turned down less than five. Finally, Jerry Jones said he wants to make an adjustment to the NFL schedule. Jones said he wants to make the season 18 games and reduce the preseason to 2 games. All right, Chris, what do you think of the proposal?
I don't like an 18-game schedule. I mean, and also, this is not new. I mean, they dusted this one off from way back when. They've been trying to do this for a long time. Now, for the fans of the NFL, it's not good for them for 4 preseason games. But when you get your season tickets, they demand that you get those. With those 8 games you get 2 preseason games. So they make sure that you have a 10-game package. But if we're building a football team, and unless they're going to come up with some type of spring league that the NFL is going to develop players, man, we need training camp. We don't have any 2-a-day padded practices now. And if you tell me you're going to take away 2 preseason games, I'm just going to tell you, watch the NFL the first month of the season. We like football, but the product will get better as the season goes on. So now you remove 2 of those. How do we develop younger players? Like, you can't develop younger players by only 2 preseason games. Look at the quarterbacks that have played. What's the difference between Lamar Jackson 2 weeks ago and Lamar Jackson after 4 preseason games? Huge difference. Baker Mayfield, he's not ready to play. Sam Darnold, he's not. And forget about developing internal line play. We talk about, Nick, college players not being ready to play on the O-line. So we're going to draft a guy on the offensive line and put him in an NFL game after 2 preseason
games? What about discovering players? How'd Terrell Davis get his roster spot? A preseason tackle on special teams.
Yes.
Then he went on to win an MVP Hall of Famer. Like, you're going to miss. I think the preseason is a much maligned thing unfairly. And a lot of it's because it's just the way the tickets are printed, if I'm being totally honest. If you have season tickets to an NBA or to an NFL team, 10 games, and they put on their $100 a game, so you're paying $1,000. You're like, man, I'm paying $100 for this preseason game just like I am for our Week 15 matchup. Man, I don't know why teams don't do this. Your season tickets can still be called $1,000. Put on the ticket. The regular season games cost $120, and the preseason game costs $20. And guess what? It's still a 10-game package for $1,000. People are like, oh, $20. Not bad. It's just tricking people in their minds. So I think the preseason at fewest should go to 3 games. Now, if they are going, I don't know why the NFL, there's another thing. I don't know why no one at the NFL talks about this. They act like the only option is 16 or 18. There's a number between there. It's 17. Oh, how would you do it? Home road. Guys, we can do 1 neutral site game. I've advocated for every team play an international game. If you don't like that, what if every team plays 1 game a year on a college campus in a place that doesn't have in Tuscaloosa, or they almost have an NFL team, or in Columbus, or
San Antonio, a place that has.
There's a way to do it where you could do 8 home, 8 road, 8 neutral, or 1 neutral site. And by the way, you could also add a bye week. If you went to 17 games and an extra bye week, not only do you have 2 extra weekends to sell the television companies, but guess what? Then the Super Bowl is the day before President's Day. And then everybody has the Monday after the Super Bowl off. There's a lot of ways to do this that are not as, that are not just add two games to the schedule, which the players wouldn't love, which it could, when we're talking about the health and well-being of the players, it would obviously add some negatives there. And I think the preseason's important. I don't think it's just important for – we know Sam Darnold's making the team. What about the guys who might not? What about guys who have become quality players in this league as undrafted free agents because they flashed in the third and fourth preseason?
Regardless of what your favorite team is, I want you to look at your roster right now, and I want you to see on your roster how many guys you have that were off-the-street free agents and also how many guys you have been playing in the league under 6 years. When you look at that number, there's no fans that would want to cancel the preseason, even though it is to the detriment of the fan.
All right, let's move on to Odell Beckham now. To quote the great Eric Mangini, to whom much is given, much is expected. Odell just signed a deal on Monday, making him the highest-paid receiver in NFL history. Much was given. Despite getting over $65 million in guaranteed coming his way, Beckham knows that both on and off the field, much is expected.
Honestly, it sounds crazy enough, but I don't feel like I've done anything, really, since I've been here. It's not my what I have goals for myself. I don't feel like I've been able to truly achieve them, even with the success that I've had. You know, it's not really where I want to be. You know, like I said, before I was even in the NFL, I want to be legendary. Not about, yeah, the money is great. You can take care of your family. You can take care of kids one day that you'll possibly have. But my goal was always to be in the Hall of Fame, to win trophies, to be able to leave a legacy that'll be remembered way past any money that you make.
All right, CeCe, he sort of mentioned all the different ceilings there, but what does Odell need to do on the field to reach his own expectations?
Have a good season. Like, don't listen to people. Don't put different expectations just because he has $65 million guaranteed. He shouldn't do that because his productivity, what he's done on the field, will lead him to being considered one of the greats of the game, only if he's consistent, only if he's not hurt. Where does that start? It starts with having a good month of September. Real small, small goals. I wouldn't allow people to let at this age, I wasn't thinking about trying to be in the Hall of Fame. I was thinking about trying to, if I had a good season, I was trying to follow that season up with another good season. I was trying to take care of my body to make sure that I could make it through the season. So all these things happen if you're able to be consistent. One of the things that I take in, and when you consider players, how often they're on the field, that means how infrequently that they don't get hurt, but also how consistent are you. Larry Fitzgerald, the reason why he's one of the greats in the game, he has been so consistent year after year after year. You know what you're going to get. What we should get with Odell is 8 to 12 touchdowns. We should get 1,400 yards. We should get 90 catches. That's what we should be trying to do. Where he's going to end up at the end of his career, that is not his worry or his concern. And the amount of pressure that should be on him is no different than the amount of pressure that's been on him the first four seasons in the NFL.
So as far as his on-field production, if I just take of his three full seasons, so throw last year out because he was injured, his worst receptions, lowest yards, fewest touchdowns, you get 91 receptions, 1,305 yards, 10 touchdowns. If he does that, like you're saying, that if that's his average and that's his worst, if that's his average for a decade, he does exactly what he's talking about. Now, I can't. It's not totally fair to say throw out the injury because the injury matters. And if you're a guy that has repeated or multiple injuries, that derails everything.
And let's not try to act like a decade is a 20-game hit streak. Now, how many receivers have we seen put together a decade? We didn't see Calvin Johnson put together a decade. So when you say that, you have to realize how long you're talking. In this NFL, you're talking to, man, it's almost impossible to put together a 10-year window.
No, absolutely right. But I am taking him at his word that those are what his goals are. And if that's the case, then the standard that C and you hold to Odell to, which is different than what I do, that's the correct one. If Odell is holding himself to the standard of, I want to be legendary, I want to be one of the greatest to ever do it, well, then all of the things have to matter. I have said for a long time, when you put up those types of numbers, I will deal with the other nonsense around you as long as it's not to where your teammates are like, I hate him, you're fighting, things like that.
One thing about that, though, Nick, it's even on teams, guys that are bad guys, even their teammates don't say they hate them. But what they do, they hate their antics.
Of course.
They don't necessarily like being around them. But a lot of times, you just can't say that because you're in a team sport and you know the magnitude of your comments.
Agreed. But I don't think Odell's a bad guy. I don't think that applies to him in this regard. Now, he can be a distraction. There's no doubt about that. But, again, if Odell's goals were, I want to become, at one point, the highest paid person in the world at what I do, and I want to be one of the four or five best in the world at what I do. Those are incredibly high goals, and he would have already achieved them. And if he says, hey, I'm going to keep going this as long as I can, I wouldn't judge you for that. Now, but those aren't his goals. He has set higher standards, different goals, holding himself to a different standard. So that does mean not just the consistency you're talking about, but it means less of the stuff that rubs you the wrong way.
Didn't he tell you last season, as far as the off-the-field stuff that he wants to do, I want to be a better man, I really want to work on myself. This was before the end zone antics, and it was before the video came out.
Yeah, the end zone antics have an explanation, though. There's an explanation. There's a justifiable explanation why he did that.
And okay. If people don't know, it was he says it was a response to the president's comments. The response to the president's comments saying SOBs said, I'm going to act like a dog then. But go ahead.
Okay, but I guess my point is there a part of it, CeCe, at least for you, that you want to say, okay, enough, just go on the field and play. Let me see. Don't say you want to wear a Hall of Fame jacket. Don't say you want to be a better. There's a lot of expectations that you're setting for yourself. Let me see you get through the season healthy, productive, and without any distractions.
No, I'm glad he said that. Because great people have great expectations for themselves. I'm glad he gave us a peek inside of what he wants to do. Because also, I tell kids, man, it's dream. Write it down. Tell someone. Because now you're responsible for what you said. So now his actions, everything that he does, I can say, does it line up to get you where you said you want to go? So, yes, I'm glad he said that. That should be his goal. Like, it should be his goal. But now let's work on it. Let's put together another 1,300, 1,400-yard season. That's what the legendary players in this game have done without all the other stuff. Most of them except a couple.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I just I don't think people doubt what he can do on the field. I do think some of this he brings on himself, and some of this is because of his celebrity. We really focus on, like you just said, go out on the field and do it. The guy's been hurt for a year. The day after he signs a contract, if he didn't do the press conference, let's be fair here, if he did not do that press conference, he'd get criticized. So it's not fair if he does the press conference and says, doesn't say anything about being a celebrity.
I don't think anyone, Nick, has any issue with the expectations he set himself on the field. I think everyone knows how good of a player he is. Maybe we haven't seen him in a while, but I don't think anyone has a big issue with, I want to do this, I want to be in the Hall of Fame.
But Jenna,
issue was him coming out last year and saying, that's it. I'm ready. I want to be a better man. And then that video comes out. So I'm like, all right, let me see you do it before you tell me you're going to do
okay,
it.
Okay. And all right.
Him in the video didn't make him a bad man.
It didn't make him a bad man, but it contradicted what he said. So now
we don't have to relitigate that. I think that showed poor judgment. I don't think that showed poor character. Now, some people out there have said any type of drug use shows poor character, that's not how I feel. I feel like this is something a lot of people in this country do in their spare time, whether they're supposed to or not. I don't think it shows poor character. This is a guy who did not have to. He FaceTimed my son because he knew he's so good with kids.
No doubt.
He absolutely, and I understand, he has done things that have disappointed you, but I have also seen him look at you admirably and say, how do I get there? Now, as a young person, as a famous person, as a rich person, you stray from that sometimes. But I think this is a hard reset for him. He got his money.
Yeah.
He's healthy. The Giants have theoretically the best offense they will have had in his time there. Now let's see him go play football.
And
again.
Really all that matters right now is that Odell believes in himself and the Giants believe in Odell. And now
Odell's better
forward
than what he knows he is. He is. He's better than that.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, hey,
why
are the Raiders playing hardball with Khalil Mack? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former NFL head coach Eric Mangini joins us. Hey, Coach.
Good morning.
We're getting closer to football.
Yeah.
The Raiders open their season on Monday Night Football against the Rams. That's in 12 days, but Khalil Mack might not be on the field. That's because Mack continues to want to be the highest paid defensive player in the league. And the Raiders continue to not want to make him the highest paid defensive player in the league. According to reports, both sides are in a stalemate, and it is likely Mack misses regular season games. All right, Coach. What do you make of the way this entire situation is being handled, has been handled thus far?
This has been mishandled really by both sides since the beginning. I think if they were able to at some point get together, sit down, talk, and if it was just John and Khalil, that would be fine. And I really feel that Odell took the right approach. Odell showed up. He showed the new head coach, he showed the new GM, he showed the owner that he was committed to the program, that he was healthy, that he was going to work. He allowed them to see all the value that he brought to the team, where in this other situation, it's been butting heads since the beginning. And you've got a head coach who signed a 10-year deal for $100 million. He's got all the power, and he's looking at this longer term as to what type of precedent am I going to set. And when you come in and you make things confrontational from the beginning, then you just get two guys in a standoff, and it's
hard. Who made
hard.
Things confrontational from the beginning?
Well, it depends on who you listen to. According to the reports I've read, John reached out. His calls were never returned. I don't know if he reached out a second time. To me, confrontation, both parties are responsible for that. Either one could have just said, hey, why don't we get together and spend some time together and just see where that goes?
But at this point, just based on something we discussed off the air yesterday, you are concerned, or you would be concerned if you were Gruden, that if they give him the money, it sets a bad precedent for the other players on the team moving forward and as far as the rest of what he hopes is a 10-year tenure as the Raiders head coach?
Well, whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency, whether it's holdouts, whether it's discipline, you set a precedent. And once that precedent is set, then it's hard to roll it back. So if you allow people to shoot their way out of contracts, if you allow people to take that stance, then what's to stop the next guy from doing it and the next guy from doing it and the next guy from doing it? Because they know you're going to fold. So now you created a problem that didn't exist before.
Yeah, I believe, especially when a coach is trying to reestablish a culture or he's trying to implement something that's totally different than what they're used to, it becomes very important that he's consistent at the beginning in his decision making. Now, if John Gruden is going to win football games are won by good players making good decisions under stressful situations. And I would try to equip myself, if I was starting out, with the best possibility that I might be able to be successful. Now, I know they're worried about the long-term ramifications from this contract. Because if you give a defensive player this type of money, ultimately, what is it going to mean in the locker room? Your quarterback, which he wasn't the high draft pick. He was a second-round pick, not the first-round pick. They gave him the contract. So in giving him that contract, he hasn't performed as high as Khalil Mack has performed. So also, in not giving Khalil Mack, what John Gruden is doing, he's sending a sign to the team inadvertently that this guy, who has we haven't had any problems with, there's nothing that he can do to get a contract with Carr, who was a quarterback, who people say, how good is he going to be, who they did give a contract to.
And what you're talking about setting precedent. What if the precedent is as simple as this? Yeah, we do bend if you're an MVP. If you're defensive MVP, offensive MVP. If you're the best in the league at what you do, we actually might give you a contract early. We might bend to your demands. Like, if I'm the right guard on the Raiders, unless I'm delusional, I don't look at what they did for Khalil Mack and say, well, that means they got to do it for me, right? Or do you think I'm misreading that?
I think that players look at what happens to other players, and they all feel like they're extremely important to the team. And regardless of what spot I have, you're gonna look at how that was, you know, how that was handled with other guys. Now, there's a difference between having a precedent and belief system and just being stubborn to the point of hurting yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with these two sides getting together and spending some time together. Those two people need to talk. Those two people need to spend some time
right.
together.
I can look at it in hindsight now, because we're getting ready to start the season. But in these situations, I don't believe every player's situation is the same. Odell, as you mentioned, I gave him the advice. You need to go to the Giants. You need to go to Pat Shurmur from his first day. You need to talk to him. You need your own relationship with him. And whatever Pat tells you, and I know what Pat's going to tell you, you need to be at minicamp. You need to be at the OTAs. So you need to be in agreement with him before you even go into the meeting, Odell, because this is what he's going to ask you to do. So I believe in certain instances you get more done being in the building because the coaches, the organizations, they can see the assets. If I was Khalil Mack, what I wish he would have done, I wish they could have came to an agreement on a one-year deal. I wish he would have went to training camp because I would in training camp, if I was Khalil Mack, what I would have done, I would have destroyed John Gruden's practices. I would have destroyed all of his offensive linemen and let him know there is no future without me, because that's one thing coaches understand. When they see the talent, and we can't go back, but if he has signed a one-year job, if John could see how good the guy is, how good he is in the locker room, a lot of times you can see a long-term deal worked out because John says, listen, I'm not going to win a lot of football games unless I have that guy on the field.
Is John Gruden making the decision here? Is this going to be John Gruden's decision?
Yes, 100% he's making the decision. And he's got
Coach, how do you know that?
Because he's got a 10-year contract. He's made $100 million. The owner said it was one of the best days of his life when he hired him. He's making whatever decision.
He's got the juice.
The juice times,
you know, 100 what, million.
Yeah, or my kids would say times infinity. So he's got that power. Now, with Khalil, if he's acting this way when he wants a contract, how is he going to act when he gets a contract?
See, I don't think so.
I know where you're going to go with this, but what's wrong with Khalil showing that he's vested in the team? He's vested.
Because it is a partnership.
It is a partnership.
It is a partnership. And what's wrong with the team doing what the teams as a whole said they would do? The entire purpose of the new CBA, the whole purpose of it, was to pay who? Not unproven rookies, guys like Khalil Mack.
But I ain't got it, though, Nick.
Okay, well, that's a separate issue than maybe.
Well, you should mention that, then.
That the Raiders are cash poor of all the NFL teams. They are the most cash poor. Fair enough. They found the money, as Coach mentioned, in the couch cushions for Gruden's $100 million. So I think you could find the cash. This is my problem, and this is why, like, Odell had to be on his best behavior. He missed last year with injury. He has been a fringe guy when he's not between the lines. A video came out that we talked about last segment of potentially drugs in a hotel room. He damn sure better show up. He damn sure better do everything right. This guy's never missed a game. He's never been injured. He's been your best player for 4 years. You are, the last 2 years, second to the last in the league in sacks, despite the fact that he's top five in the league in sacks in that same time frame. He shouldn't. The right thing to do is to pay him.
So sitting back, you see somebody new get hired who has the control that he has, and you are the player that, mm-hmm. that Khalil Mack is. What makes you think, hey, I'm not going to return calls, I'm not going to engage with this person who controls my future, and I think really good things are going to come
maybe
from that.
Maybe he got bad advice from his agent.
That happens all the time.
I would imagine.
And he needs to call Chris, because Chris gave Odell really good advice, and Odell.
And that
got
was
paid.
Before the hotel room.
Correct. That was before the hotel room, but
yes.
Post-injury and post all the other stuff. Once we knew, listen, Odell, you've been there. Tom Coughlin got fired. Then McAdoo got fired. Now you got an offensive coach. Like, you need to repair these things. I don't believe in the idea that a player that is achieved at the level that Khalil Mack has, that it's as simple as, well, he's under contract. Like, the whole
It is as simple as he's under contract. If he wants to go get paid at a record level, then be a free agent, like Kirk Cousins was.
Odell didn't have to reset the bar. Like, these guys.
Every guy's different with different teams now. You can't Stan Kroenke, what he's doing, the Mara family, what they're doing. Their pockets are a lot deeper, too.
Can we acknowledge this? Just last point, I apologize. That there's 32 teams in the league. 30 of them would have already given Khalil Mack an extension.
But we can't forget that the Raiders don't have the cash, though.
Who are the two you're saying?
The Raiders and a mystery team. New England, maybe?
You think Khalil Mack was not going to show up in New England, and then Bill would be like, oh, I love that behavior. Let me reward you with the highest paid contract in the world.
They just paid Shaq Mason early. They do pay guys.
Gotta take a break. Coach, stick around. Is everybody blowing Julian Edelman's absence way out of proportion? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First with Coach Mangini. Le'Veon Bell still has yet to report to Steelers training camp because he still has yet to sign his franchise tag. If any of this sounds familiar, it's because it's exactly what happened last year. L. Bell reportedly told his teammates he would report on Labor Day. However, Bell tweeted, "Don't believe the fake news. I never said anything to no one." Sometimes I read it like a Saturday Night Live skit just because amuses me. Coach, how much will missing training camp hurt L. Bell? He missed training camp last year. He struggled a little bit in the first couple of games, and then obviously his season took off, but there was a little bit of a struggle. So how much will it affect him this year?
It's going to affect him. Now, at least he does have something to draw on from last year and things that worked, things that didn't work. When you look at his whole season, over half the games he played, and he averaged under 4 yards a carry, which I don't think people realize. We assume that production was incredible throughout the course of the season. But over half the games he played, and he was under 4 yards a carry, which to me is a concern. And you go into the second year and you don't have the conditioning, you haven't hit it all, you're not into a rhythm. It's a new offensive coordinator, and with a new offensive coordinator comes new tendencies, new terminology, new ways of calling things. It's different than him just going back with Todd Haley, which he had been used to. He's going to have to get used to that component as well. So I think this is going to be a struggle for him early.
Listen, Le'Veon Bell in September last year was one player, and the rest of the year was another player. In September, he was 3.5 yards per carry, 60 yards per game on the ground, less than 20 yards per game through the air. The rest of the year, he was 50 yards per game through the air, 90 on the ground, and over 4 yards per carry. Like, it took a...
Really? Are you reading? I mean, I think he had, like, one game where he was at 5-point-something yards a carry, but there's a bunch of games where, like, 3.8, 3.2.
Oh, yeah. He was four.
I can't see your list because I don't have my glasses on, but pretty sure I read that this morning.
You're correct. I wasn't disputing what you were saying. The point I'm making is that in September, he struggled mightily. The rest of the year, he was good. Maybe not the yards per carry you would like, but at least the overall totality of yards. He averaged the rest of the year 140 yards from scrimmage per game after September. But in September, it was less than 80 yards from scrimmage per game. So even if in the year as a whole, he was not as efficient as you would like, he was particularly at his weakest in September. There's no reason to think that'll be different this year. I know he has the experience to draw on it, but this is your whole thing about how do you get better at football? Practicing football? How do you get ready to play football? Playing football? Like, I understand why he's not there. I think a guy who's under the franchise tag would be foolish to show up early. I get it. They're not finding him. He's not missing money. He's removing injury. Mm-hmm. But the downside to that is he's going to come into the season less ready than had he gone to training camp. Like, that's definitely what takes place in these situations.
Yeah, and this is just a phase of his career that he's going to have to try to master. Because I know when he looks back on it, he would have done things different. And the reason why I can say that is I just know how much better I got as a football player from the time I was 26 until the time I was 32. And that came from consistently being at training camp 6 or 7 weeks, playing in almost every game. I think I got hurt in the 93 season, and I think that I did not miss another game until the 2002 season. And that endurance was built up in training camp. I don't care how hard you train with your trainers. Like, I don't care. They cannot get you in shape for a 2-minute drive. They cannot get you in shape for a drive where we have 12 plays where he touches the ball 8 times. There's no drill. There is no trainer out there that can do a drill that can simulate guys on your legs, him pausing in the middle of the line of scrimmage, juking people. So I don't believe it, but he had to get through this period of being franchised. When you are franchised and you are a running back, there is a different set of rules for you. I don't think they should go to training camp like I had Khalil Mack or like I had OBJ, okay, because their careers are shorter, how they're used, and the potential for injury is greater. So he's in a unique situation, but he's still young enough. But I'm never going to say on TV, a player got better from missing training camp or missing practice. That's just, that's just, it doesn't make any type of sense.
And you get to the point, too, where it's not just the physical side, but the anxiety, the thinking through things, the being able to respond quickly, the understanding how everything fits together. You've got to get used to that as well. And look, Le'Veon Bell has had the benefit of a really good passing game for a long time, where you've got to stop Antonio Brown. You've got to deal with Ben Roethlisberger. That's a huge advantage for a running back. I would expect someone who played in Pittsburgh to be able to have significant numbers because you've got to play with seven in the box to stop the passing game a lot of times.
You mentioned a new offensive coordinator. How hard is it for a guy who has experience, who's played with the team before, but now to come in and get used to, I don't want to call it new language, but just a new coordinator, new set of the way you're doing things?
Well, he's very fortunate that the coordinators are not allowed to change their whole system in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's had a system that has worked. It's worked through several coordinators. Started off with Bruce Arians making tremendous changes. Ben Roethlisberger has had a tremendous impact on that. Went through Todd Haley and the guy that they have now. So when you're in that type of situation, changing coordinator, most of the stuff is stuff that you've done. But you don't know the coordinator. That's one thing that Brian Billick taught me. He said, Chris, if you're ever going to be the offensive leader, you got to think like me. I said, Brian, I don't want to do that, man. You know, you're a big old raggedy tight end from BYU. I don't want to think like you. He said, Chris, if you want to lead this team, you're going to have to think like me. So I had to memorize the plays. After we crossed the 50, there was five plays Brian liked to run. Once we went into the red zone, there was five plays Brian liked to run. Third down and five, 4-6, Brian liked to run. Five certain plays. I memorized those plays. One time, Brad Johnson's headset went out, and we were third down and five. He said, what? I said, man, Brian liked that H dodge on third down. So you have situations like that that play out. That coach, he loves that. And that's why you want your players to be so you can add layers of offense on the stuff. Because he's a brilliant football player. Smart, can play three downs, can pick up blitz.
Like, and a workhorse.
Yes.
NFL history, most touches per game, all-time record holder, this guy. And I understand that it's not ideal that he's now missed back-to-back.
And he would still be better with training
camps. Right. And that's what I was about to say. It's not ideal that he's missed back-to-back training camps. Guess what? The Steelers could have prevented that as well. He would have been in camp with a contract.
Amen.
There's a positive to franchising a guy as a team. You remove the risk of injury as far as
they didn't do it with Antonio.
Right.
They gave him the long deal.
And so there's a positive, which is you're not tied to guy long term. If his production drops, if he gets hurt, you can move on. I get it. The negative is he might not be the guy you want him to be that first month of the year. So I mean, there's a give and a take here. He has benefited from being on the Steelers. Steelers have benefited quite a bit from having him on the team as well.
Yeah, he'd miss a little time too, right?
What? Yes, he's missed. He's missed a little. You added the what's suspicious.
NFL players, fire your agent. Hire Nick Wright. Let him represent your best interest. Man, he has the results of Dez Bryant going into Jerry Jones. Hey, I want a pay raise. Hey, you out the door. All right?
Dez fired me.
He'll find a way to get you fired or paid. One or the other.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.